Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Guardian Radio in the AM. This is CA Nuri, and I shall be your host for today's show. Nearly a month ago, a monster conjured up a plea bargain with the courts and subsequently received a four-year plea deal for supposedly having consensual sex with a 14-year-old minor. The minor is now pregnant. This, of course, caused a firestorm of commentary, and the entire Bahamas was seemingly up in arms. Well, we were mad, and we were outraged, at least for a while. Besides commentary of outrage from the general public, there was a number of politicians, religious leaders, and social advocates who also weighed in. There was a cry to change the legal age of consent from 16 years old to 18 years of age. There was a cry for action by lawmakers. It was said that this increase will further protect minors, that this new law will make clear that children who cannot drink alcohol, who cannot join law enforcement, children who cannot open a bank account, who cannot stand before the courts as an adult or vote, for example, cannot reasonably consent to have sex with an adult. Mind you, the existing law did not protect that 14-year-old pregnant girl, but that's an entirely different story. But today, we are going to have a tough conversation. Today, after my first voice note, as soon as I finish, we are going to talk to human rights activist Erin Greens. You know, she was just on just a few minutes ago, but she's under a different cap, a different type of responsibility on my show today. And we're going to talk particularly about 16-year-olds. Do 16-year-olds have any rights at all? Right? Can they have a right to consent? Do they have a right to control their bodies? Do they have a right to their sexuality? Are they sexual beings at 16 years old? Right? Do 16-year-olds in general have any rights in general? Right? Or is it that their parents must make decisions? I appreciate politicians and religious leaders wanting to protect our children, you know. Every reasonable Bahamian, right-thinking Bahamian support this, but surely not within a vacuum, right? I'm not sure if we are looking at this policy changes, if we're looking at it properly. I think that we are actually going the easy route, the lazy route, where by just simply changing the age of consent. But how will this laws actually affect the current way of being? Let me be clear. Grown Bahamian adults should not be having sex with our children. They need to leave our freaking children alone. But before we change any laws, shouldn't we at least consult the people who it impacts? Shouldn't we at least have a national debate? What about the stakeholders? I haven't heard any conversation about youth from any youth advocates and the like. How come they aren't leading this debate? You know? So this is what I'm going to have a conversation about with Erin Green, the human rights activist, whether young people have any rights. But play that first clip for me so we can start our conversation.
For consent, Christian Council President Bishop Delton Fernander is supporting that view. He says 18 is a suitable age.
If consent and adulthood and the ability to do certain things in our country is 18, I would think something as serious as sex should be 18 also. So as pastor, as a father of a daughter and a son, I would say 18 is an appropriate age to give consent.
His comments shadow those of Deputy Prime Minister Chester Cooper, who in a Facebook post said cabinet is looking into the matter. He said the discussion about the age of consent should be followed by action on the part of lawmakers. Cooper previously called for the legal age of consent to be increased to 18 years of age. Cooper's statement came after National Security Minister Wayne Monroe was blasted for saying a four-year sentence given to a man who impregnated a 14-year-old girl was too severe.
I really don't look to those people to give me my position on things. I really think as a father, if my daughter has been assaulted, raped, and impregnated, I expect the court to take its due course. The time and sentencing, I need more information to know how did it get to 4 years, because it really, really seems to be a short time, horrendous thing.
Fernander added that he doesn't believe in blaming the victim, but in protecting them. He stressed, though, that the church is doing its part.
I think the criticism of the church is always based on those who don't know what the church is doing in society. That while others are just waking up to this, most of the centers are manned by church people. We're trying to move Christian counseling to the next level, that the first person these incidents happen to, they come to the desk of pastors. And I know we don't get that information in John Paul because we are very good at being confidential, but I want to assure you that pastors are on the front line.
Reporting for Our News, Amber.
Aaron, thanks very much for joining me on the show, by the way.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And before I allow you to give some commentary, and particularly on how you become a human rights activist, right?
Right?
And what does that entail? And also some definitions between what is an activist and what is an advocate, so Bohemians can understand. I would like to say first, we continue to fail our children.
Every day.
And this is a clear example of that. We had a girl who was, and I can put it in quotes, and I just to poke the bear at the Bohemian people who listen, who was technically raped. You see that word, an insulting word I use?
Yeah.
I use insulting words purposely to spur on debate. We had a 14-year-old girl who was technically raped. And that was about 4 to 6 weeks ago, and the debate gone silent, quiet. We were mad for 1 week. We were vexed to ratted for 1 freaking week.
I mean,
nobody is talking about it no more. Where are the child advocates, right? And then we had a politician. We had several politicians, by the way. Several politicians come out of their corner of the room saying, we must do this and we must do that and these rapists must be damned, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what we even had a politician who said that new laws will be, a compendium laws will be put to the Parliament by next week. That was the 6th. Next week is the 12th. And remind me, what today's date is?
Today's the 22nd.
So it's supposed to be the 12th. That's what they say, though.
Yeah.
I have the news report right in front of me. Say, by the 12th, we will have the laws in Parliament that we can debate it. And the 12th came and gone. Then the 13th. Then the 14th. Then the 15th. And et cetera. And et cetera. See, we's feign. We's pretend to be angry at these situations, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's form over function. We know how you're supposed to respond, how you're supposed to look in response, right?
Yes.
But we don't know what you're actually supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you screw up your face and you cry. You're supposed to be upset, but we don't know what that upset really supposed to feel like. Because if we did, then we would know that that sincere, authentic response spurs action.
So
right?
Are you angry?
I'm very angry. Yeah. I was so moved and concerned that I created a child protection day for the week of April. So every Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
right, I focus on child protection issues.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of days, I had to switch it to the Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, I had the author of a children's book that not only focuses on child sex abuse, but aims to give parents and children tools to deal with it within the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm very, very concerned about it. I think here's a part of the problem. I think lots of people are concerned about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But lots of people don't know what to do next. They don't know how to take that concern, which is potential energy, right? And turn it into action, which is kinetic energy. Right, so when you ask the question, listen, what's an advocate, right?
Yes, I want to know the difference, because I remember you explained it to me once. And I think that a number of Bohemians do not understand these words.
Right, so an activist is somebody who is engaged in activities with members of the community that they are seeking to serve. Right, so an activist will... If an activist is focused on child protection issues, an activist will be running programs in communities and community centers to create safe spaces for young people.
So I cannot claim to be an activist if I have no program?
Well, you can't claim to be an activist if you're not doing something with the constituents of the community you say you serve.
Not blogging on Facebook?
No, that's in the realm of advocacy.
Not calling the talk shows?
That's in the realm of advocacy and advocating on behalf of a community, raising awareness or growing attention on or directing attention on the issues that the community you seek to serve face. I am an advocate, right?
Mm-hmm.
At one point, in fact, when RAB started, mm-hmm. we were advocates.
Remind me what RAB is.
The Rainbow Alliance of the Public.
I knew it, right? But I just wanted to put a public.
Advocacy and support group for LGBTI people. The first advocacy group.
Yes.
Not support, but the first advocacy group, public advocacy group for people. Now, at one point, RAB created a community center,
mm-hmm.
and we sought to offer programming within a space for members of the community to come and engage. And what was particular about it is that we wanted a space, a safe space that was alcohol and drug free.
Mm-hmm.
Just understanding that, lots of people issues with substance abuse
mm-hmm.
and substance dependency, right? And so we wanted to create a space that we would fill with activities for people who didn't want to be around substances. So that community center then brought our work into the realm of activism. We had a few programs. The community center wasn't operational for very long, and then we sort of transitioned back into the space of advocacy, where we advocated on behalf of the community. So as a LGBTI advocate mm-hmm. for the vast majority of my career, I haven't worked with people in programs. I did do some activism, which was handing out health information at nightclubs, right? So health information with paraphernalia, contraceptives, mm-hmm. Safety tools, and then pamphlets with information.
So you now go as a human rights advocate or a human rights
advocate? I'm an advocate.
And I know you travel representing the Bahamas once or twice. It's something called CEDAW.
Yeah, so...
What is that? So I can move on
right,
to my next
point. Right, so in 2018 allowed me to present their report to CEDAW
mm-hmm.
so that I could also raise some issues that were specific to my personal professional advocacy.
And what is CEDAW?
So CEDAW is the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women and Girls, essentially.
And girls. Yes,
right?
Essentially.
It's a UN treaty, and there's a CEDAW body that manages that treaty, and governments that have signed on to that treaty, they report to the CEDAW committee, right? And so CEDAW committee comes up with recommendations, and the government looks at them and says, okay, well, we can work on these recommendations, say, well, the way that our law is written right now, we can't look at these recommendations right now. We mm-hmm. can work on these.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to your home country, you work on implementing those recommendations and inculcating the principles reflected or represented in those recommendations and the treaty provisions in your domestic law and policy. And then after a time, you go back before the board to review the work that you've done in that time, right? And so activists and advocates, right, that are part of organizations are invited to do a shadow report, right? So this is, we look at the recommendations that the CEDAW committee gave the government,
mm-hmm.
and we do a shadow report.
Mm-hmm.
We say, well, listen, they did some work on this, you know, but when you delve into it, you realize that while they are doing some good work, they're not hitting the key principles that are underlined in this convention. Or you may say, listen, they're ignoring this. Or you may, I'm very concerned about, right? We may need to have a petition, but because this, anyway, this is not your show.
Yes, and mind you, I'm intrigued, I'm listening, but what I wanted to ask, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you say recommendations by CEDAW and these other group. Out of the blue, we see the Deputy Prime Minister saying that he believes, his personal view, that the consent age needs to move from 16 to 18. His personal view, right? And then we see that was echoed by the leader of the Christian Council in their personal view. This was not sparked by any international group. This was not encouraged by any local group. And I'm saying these were, I think, I'm talking about rights for young adults, rights for the child. So this came out of the blue. And I said, okay, nothing, this would be elected our members of parliament for, to give their humble opinion, and we shall have a debate on it. And the stakeholders within the community will come and either support it or denounce it, right?
Or be involved in the debate.
And I'm going to get there. Yeah. They ain't involved in no debate. In fact, when 2 days after the believes that there should the consent age from 16 to 18 should be moved to 18, the Attorney General said, yeah, we have a compendium of laws and that's one of them. We plan to change it. And I said, wait, who did they ask?
Yeah.
Who did they involve? Where was the debate and exchange where persons who are stakeholders, who are in the trenches, who are in the grounds, right, dealing with teenage and their issues, right? Where are they in this conversation saying that, do you agree for it to be changed or do you understand something different? Right, I want to read something first before I let you comment, right?
Yeah.
And I also have a trivia questions where the prize is one VIB ticket to Fusion's Superplex. But I'm going to read that later on. So just get ready to read that. But I want to read the sexual consent age of the United States. Guess what? No, I mean to read it. I just going to say what it is.
Yeah.
The sexual consent age in the United States, first world country, is 16.
Yeah.
And they do all kind of scientific reporting and analysis and concluded that 16 is the right age, right? Alcohol drinking is 21, and they have a slew of different ages for different things. They don't believe that their children in the mean are responsible enough to drink until they're 21. Whereas in Bahamas, you say, man, go ahead, you can drink at 18. But don't worry, I digress on that. And then I checked Canada. I said, okay, surely Canada is similar to us. I said, what age do they have? Guess what age it is? 16!
Mm-hmm.
They too did all kind of analysis to find out what is the right age for young adults to start analyzing their self-worth and making key responsibility about their sexuality. So I said, okay, they're on the American mainland continent. These people kind of be off. So let me check Germany and the United Kingdom. And all these first, I go into all every first world country just to say, well, I know they do the research, right? Because they don't speak off the cuff like our politicians do, you know, at whim. And then it's all of a sudden they turn policy and law without any consideration of stakeholders. England is 16, Germany is 15, and Australia is like 14, if I remember correctly. And I'm saying, I'm saying
the Philippines may still be.
They did up there. So they like 12, 13. They're young, bad. They're something wrong. Anyway, I ain't talking.
Yeah,
different culture altogether. But my point is, where did our Deputy Prime Minister Chester Cooper get this 18 years from? Who did he speak to?
I think that there is just a common belief that raising the age of consent is the solution to protecting young people from predatory.
Is it?
I don't think that it is.
Did the 16, right now it's 16, does it protect that 14-year-old?
Well, first of all, I don't think that the predator, the person is grooming, the predator, I don't think they care but the difference between 16 and 18. First of all, I don't care about the difference between 16 and 17.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that changing the age in and of itself will sway or change or deter or divert somehow the behavior of the adult or the predator or the quote stronger man.
Are you sure? Because the Christian Council president said this will solve it. This will protect our children.
I think that will make them feel, I think that will make parents in particular feel better about themselves and the effort that they're putting in to keep their children safe. I think maybe the word is panacea. I think that this is about making ourselves feel better.
So
right?
As a human rights activist, does a 16-year-old have any rights? right to their person, right to their space, right to say, do not touch me, or that is supposed to be for the parent to police.
No, man. First of all, absolutely, the 16-year-old, the 5-year-old, they have rights. They obviously have...
My 5-year-old have rights?
They have varying degrees of rights. Of course they have rights. Of course they have rights. If it is found that a parent is abusing their child physically, psychologically, right? Mm-hmm. That child could be removed from space. In fact, the state has a duty to remove the child from a home if it is found that the parents are abusive. So children do have rights. The rights that a 5-year-old can exercise are far different from the rights that a 16-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 14-year-old can exercise, right? But they absolutely have rights. So I was doing a little bit of research.
Go ahead.
I was looking at the Convention on the Rights of the Child, because that's one of those UN treaties that would outline what rights children have.
And we signed onto that.
Yeah, we signed onto that. I just want to read the introduction, right? It says the Convention of the Child defines... Now, let me get this... Let me be pellucidly clear here. Is from the Committee on the Rights of the Child, the 33rd session, and it is General Amendment number 4, 2003, entitled Adolescent Health Development in the Context of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, right? Mm-hmm. And the first provision is the Convention on the Rights of the Child defines a child as every human being below the age of 18 years under the law applicable, majority is attained earlier. So if it's the drive-in law, then the majority is like 17, mm-hmm. if it's this, right, a different age. Consequently, adolescents up to 18 years older of all of the rights enshrined in the Convention on the Rights of the Child. They are entitled to protection measures, and according to their evolving capacities, they can progressively exercise their rights. As they get older, they can exercise more of those rights. Just firstly, provision 2. Adolescence is a period characterized by rapid physical, cognitive, and social changes. Adolescent is a period in life characterized by rapid physical, cognitive, and social changes, including sexual and reproductive maturation. The gradual building up of the capacity to assume adult behaviors and roles involving new responsibility, requiring new knowledge and skills, right? And there is, now, when I read this, I thought people are going to be like, what are you telling me my children could do? But provision 7 is about the, and this is the period guidance in the exercise of rights. So this note also speaks to guidance, right? Understanding that young people will need guidance mm-hmm. in exercising these rights. So the convention acknowledges the responsibilities, duties of parents or other persons legally responsible for the child to provide, in a manner, the evolving capacities of the child, appropriate direction and guidance in the exercise by the child of the rights recognized in the convention.
And I hear that. And I appreciate the issues I had, right, with this whole topic. Are there any local advocacy groups for children? I'm concerned because I remember calling you and said, man, I don't know any. And I came across one. In fact, I have a voice note from Denise Major, who's a sexual and rights educator and advocate.
Right.
And so she has a program. And there's also a, and I want people to know this, there's a foothbahamas.org. which gives detailed information on the statistics of Bahamian youth and their sexuality, HIV, homes would have issues. It goes in detail, and that, again, that's focused on youthbahamas.org. Then we see in the 1990s, the U.S. government approached the Ministry of Education, and they created a group called Focus on Kids. Right,
mm-hmm.
Where they provide statistics on, and one of the examples they give that. Last year, there was 100 live births of youths. When I say youth, who between the ages of 10, I don't even know a 10-year-old could get pregnant. From 10 to 19, there were 600 children born from at the age of 10 to 19 that happened last year. So there are statistics out there.
Right.
And I wanted to know where are the who will speak on these statistics, right? Who would say that, yes, I hear you wanting to protect our children by increasing the age of consent. No. Right? Like how it's not saving the 14-year-old now at 16. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is have policies put in place. Young girls and boys can, because they are sexual beings, can get help and have advocates, persons speak on their behalf. So they can get medication, can they get go to the hospital, can they get education on how it is to be a sexual being. Because surely, being sexual, having sex is a natural thing.
Right.
So by at 16, your body already start doing that cravings.
Right. And being a sexual being is different from engaging in sexual intercourse, right? You can be a sexual being without ever having had sexual intercourse or sexual intimacy, right? So let's make that distinction that somehow, you know, sometimes we perpetuate the idea that somehow because a young person has sexual urges or sexual desire, that makes them a...
Yes, they're... And right. Mind you, we had a minister who said they're fresh. And a director of public prosecution said they're hot. So I hear what you're saying, that because they are sexual beings, they're fresh.
Right. And that's a part of where we go wrong, because that the judgment that we put on young people, it deters them from engaging with adults and responsible people and asking them sensible questions. Like you say, I am 14. I may have began my menses, my menstruation cycle at 13 or 12, mm-hmm. right? I need to know about my body.
Yes.
Knowing about my body does not mean that I'm sexually active mm-hmm. or that I am promiscuous or mm-hmm. that I intend to be promiscuous. Mm-hmm. But me not knowing about my body and these natural functions means that it's more likely, mm-hmm. right, that I will engage in unhealthy, problematic, or dangerous behavior.
So allow me right now just to ask this question so we can have the callers.
Yeah, yeah.
The question for the day for the trivia is, what was the total medal count for the Bahamas Carifta track and field team, and what they won, right? So you call in for that and with a total medal count. And you can get this one VIP ticket to Fusion. And I have a text. And producer, right after I read these texts, play all three of the voice notes by Miss Denise Major, who's a sexual reproductive health and rights educator and advocate, who visits schools, by the way, and answer questions in detail about teenage sexuality and the issues that they face and how to get contraceptives and get access to medical care and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But I want to play that. But let me just read this, right? Good morning. Last night, I was so distraught about memories of sexual abuse trauma that I was a victim. I have yet to find serious help. I am a male, and this has damaged my life forever. Sometimes anger sets in, and revengeful thoughts come in my mind. But who cares until, it says... But who cares until something's happened? And I want to tell that texter, I shall pray for you. But I'm not sure if prayer is enough. No. Is prayer enough?
No.
So do you know any place where he can call and speak?
Here's what I could do right now. David Williams has been a guest on my show a number of times, and he is one of the organizers and foundational members of the Bahamian chapter of International Men's Day the International Men's Day organization, right? Mm-hmm. And he is a part of a group that runs a number of programs for men, primarily men coming out of the prison system. Now, I know that's not necessarily your issue, sir.
Yes.
But he can direct you to support groups.
Who's that again?
For men, David Williams. And I will pull a contact.
You have it readily, or are you going to read that at a later point?
I can read that. I got it. Okay, I'm pulling it up right now. But I agree. I want to say to the gentleman, I appreciate your
candor and honesty.
And your concern. There's nothing out there. I appreciate what you're talking about and the conversations that you want to have and the support that you need. I don't know if I am the person who could do that for you. right? Like, because I'm a woman, I may not have experienced that, and perhaps the best space would be a space organized by men and facilitated by men that have experienced the same thing. So to that texter, the number for Mr. David Williams is 433-6917.
Do it again.
433-6917. And David Williams works with a number of men's programs.
Okay, producer, go with the caller. Oh, okay. And play that. Let the two speakers on hold. Do that. I'll check my phone at the same time.
But I think to the text of what I do know is there are not sufficient programs for men, for boys and for men that are dealing with sexual abuse as adults or as young people, right? Not even enough programs for children who are dealing with sexual abuse or domestic violence in the household. So as a young boy, you may have witnessed your mother or other members of the household being abused in this way. I would reach out to my priest.
Yes.
Right? If I'm in a church program, I would reach out to my priest and ask them if they are aware of programs for men, supporting men.
Okay.
Doing this.
So a great show as usual. We need to lock them bus drivers up who mess with little school children. Do we have a bus driver problem? I mean, I hear a lot of people to say that a lot.
Listen, if we
have I never heard anyone get locked up.
No, I mean, I think we may have had cases get locked up, but we don't necessarily identify them as bus drivers. Do we have a problem? We have a massive problem. It's almost as if there's a union for bus drivers that like young girls in school uniforms. The anecdotal reports, the videos on social media of jitneys that we presume are supposed to be in operation that are parked up in semi-private spaces. I've even seen videos with young women in uniforms walking off the bus.
Yes.
This is a known problem, and that was a part of the impetus behind...
It seems culturally now.
Yeah, formalizing a public transportation system so that you can vet the bus drivers. Mm-hmm. And the government would have a responsibility or oversight, right, for ensuring that only vetted bus drivers are driving our nation's children.
Go ahead, Ali. Play those clips for me. Let's run all three of them one time.
Bahamas Sexual Health and Rights Association, formerly known as Bahamas Family Planning, is a group that advocates for the rights, the sexual reproductive health and rights of all, but especially young people. This is an organization where we do have comprehensive sexuality programs for young people. My organization, the Empowerment Group as well, we go into the schools and we have these conversations with not just the students, the teachers, but as well as the parents. So those two groups, BASHRA and the Empowerment Group, again, the Bahamas Sexual Health and Rights Association, formerly known as Bahamas Family Planning, those two groups for sure deal with sexual reproductive health and rights of young people, but people in general, all people. But we have a targeted focus on young people. Okay, so my opinion on the proposed change, I think that changing it from 16 to 18 needs further review, and mainly because at the age of 16, these young adults do not have to even stay in school. These at 16, we have college students. At 16, we have individuals on the workforce. So I feel as though that more review is needed and amendments to the policies need to be made, meaning at 16, you can receive healthcare services. At 16, you can consent, but you have an advocate there where you can receive healthcare services without an adult present. You can receive treatment, care, support at the age of 16 because you can consent. So I don't think it should be done without consultation. And consultation by shareholders, consultation with those who are actually on the ground working in the schools, teachers, guidance counselors, advocates such as myself, as well as consultation with the young people who are living it, who are experiencing it, who can say what their challenges are. So that's my opinion on the proposed change. I feel as though it should be reviewed and amendments need to be made. Whereas, yes, the legal age of consent is 16, but amendments need to be made to the policy, whereas 16, 17-year-olds can receive health care services, can receive preventative services, treatment, care, and support, and that they have an advocate available for them. And I also feel as though a solution to the problem is that we need comprehensive sexuality education programs in the schools. Yes, schools have family life. Yes, there is some form of sex education, but it's the bare minimum. These children need to be taught from young what their rights are. They need to talk about consent. They need to be taught about negotiation. They need these life skills. Sex is a natural part of life. It's okay that they're sexual beings. We are all sexual beings. So we need to be taught how to be responsible with this part of our lives. We don't teach these children. We tell them, don't have sex or else you will get pregnant or disease. And then when they're 16, they're given permission to have sex, and we're not teaching them how to prevent pregnancy or disease. And then at 18, 19, 20, we are wondering why they're still messing up. Yes, we're all going to mess up in life, but give them an advantage by at least giving them proper education.
Clearly, no new law can be put in place unless they talk to this Denise Major lady. You know, from what she said, especially that because of the consent age of being 16, rights of getting treatment and going to the hospital comes into place.
Right.
Now, if you push that to 18, the 16-year-olds who could have gone to the hospital and get these assistance are no longer in place. I'm not sure if our politicians consider such things.
We already have a discrepancy in the law that is disadvantaging these same 16-year-olds tremendously and makes them more vulnerable to the predators that are out there, right? Looking for this prey. You can have sex at 16, but you cannot access medical services or information without a guardian's consent until you're 18. So we got a whole bunch of young people out there who can have sex, but who cannot learn about sex without the permission of their parent or their guardian. And that's a massive problem as well.
Definitely.
And that's a part of so one of the reasons why people are so quick to say jump to 18 is because the question is has been presented to them in the wrong way. The question has been presented, if the age for access to medical information is 18, why not raise the age of consent to 18? But the real question should be, why not drop the age of access for consent to the information to 16?
Okay, we have a commercial break now, and I see you, callers. We're going to have you on the next side of the break.
Used to get paid in little brown envelopes. Now they're debit cards, credit cards, digital money. If you're feeling overwhelmed and want to know more, the Central Bank and financial experts will be on radio talk shows from April 25th to 29th to explain topics like, can I really do without cash? Is my digital money safe? What's happening with the credit bureau?
How can I access and use sand dollars?
So listen into your favorite radio station all week for these and other topics, or visit www.getmoneysmartbahamas.com to learn more.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance.
The city of Miami is waiting for you. And Island Pay wants to take you there. Yes, you heard that correctly. Island Pay is giving away 5 priceless trips to Miami for 2 people just for using your MasterCard prepaid card. Every $30 you spend gets you a chance to win. Whether it's on groceries, gas, diapers, clothes, gifts, online, and others, it's all counting and getting you closer to an unforgettable experience in Miami. Don't have an Island Pay MasterCard yet? No problem. Get yours today. And Island Pay will give you $15 back. Island Pay, a better way to pay, a better way to win. Promotion running March 21st to May 18th, 2022. Conditions apply. Visit islandpay.com to learn more.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio in the AM. And we have some calls. So let me go straight to the call, just in case they want to answer a trivia question on how many medals did the Grifter track and field team win in order to get this ticket. And also, if you want to contribute to this conversation. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Good day.
Good day.
Finally. Ooh, I've been holding a while.
Forgive me.
There's a total of 17 medals.
The total is 17 medals. Let me make sure that I'm reading that properly. And just hold on for the producer, and the producer will take your name, and you can come in and collect your prize. And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you, and have a blessed day. I appreciate it.
Excellent. And I have a text who said that he was abused by, I'm trying to get a right word. You know when you have to consider if the wording you use could get your place of employment in trouble?
Yeah.
Yeah? He said, highfalutin people, I could use that. Senior highfalutin people who controls the Bahamas. And say, and this group passed him along. So it's like they had some kind of...
Oh, my.
Yes.
That's a vibe.
And he's saying that he's still hurting. And knowing that the people are still out there.
Yes.
Knowing that he was abused and that other people are continuing to abuse. Like, how does a person like that who has information report that when the persons who he wants to report are in high places and can influence
the outcome? Listen, my guest yesterday, Elizabeth Thompson, with her book, Haley Stems the Tide, although it's a children's book, it approached the very same subject about a young girl who eventually we realize is being abused by a member of the community in high standing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the young girl brought it to her friend. And fortunately, her friend had an aunt that both the friend and the victim trusted to share that information with. And sometimes what you have to do is you have to find somebody that you can trust to share the information with. Now, for many people, let's start here. We need to share the information with somebody we can trust to value it and to keep it safe, right? You're not going to deride me. You're not going to ridicule me. You're not going to make fun of me because I've shared that I've been a victim of abuse. You're not going to take advantage of me because I've shared that I've been a victim of abuse. And you may not move forward with the information. You may not use it for your own advantage as well, right? So that's the first thing. You're looking for somebody that you can confide in so you don't have to bear the burden of that on your own.
And speaking about confiding, and I see you, caller, this person wants you to reach out to them as they need your assistance.
So you save the number and I'll get it from you at the end of the show.
They just need some direction on how you can help. Let's see, this next text says,
go on.
I see this text, sir, and I'm not going to read that. I think it diminishes the show, but I appreciate your sentimental, it made me smile, right?
Yeah.
But I'm going back to the show and knowing that we have about 5 minutes left.
Okay,
right?
Let me just back to that last text. Mm-hmm. Listen, this idea that the people have been victims, not just of one person, but of multiple people, right? And it's known, and that's a really good tamarind. It's known, right? By others that are party to the cycle. I've been hearing about these things happening. And so when people talk about there's a rape culture in the Bahamas, these are the incidents that we highlight that lead us to.
Do you believe there's a rape culture in the Bahamas?
Of course there's a rape culture in the Bahamas. There's absolutely a rape culture in the Bahamas, right? But if we see rape as an act of sex for pleasure, then we misconstrue the whole thing, then we don't understand what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Rape is about power. Mm-hmm. Right? Rape is about taking and displaying power, exerting dominance over another person. Sexual intercourse is a means of that power playing out.
That power.
Right, but it's not about the sex, it's about the power. And when we understand that, then we see that same type of dynamic in operation across the country. We engage each other and we try to navigate spaces by dominating people with these power dynamics.
Let me get this last phone call in before we go. Go ahead, producer. Let this last phone call come in, please. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead, caller. You're on Guardian Radio.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was trying to answer the question for the medal.
Oh, that, unfortunately, the person just won it. But thanks very much for calling.
Sir?
Go ahead.
The person said 17, but the 17 is the track and field.
It is a track and field.
Overall total was 65.
Yes. The question is, how many total medals the Bahamas got a grifter for track and field team that the track and field team won?
Oh, it refers to track and field.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
I did not hear.
I appreciate you calling for the update, but that was the answer I was looking for. And thank you very much, Aaron, for joining me today. This is clearly a subject that we need to discuss further. We may need to have at least 2 days of this because. Right now, we need to understand whether a 16-year-old has a right to their sexuality. And it seems as if our politicians do not care. They're not being included into the conversation. And the persons who are vested in this debate is not participating.
Right. And it suggests that the people who are making the decisions don't understand the context, the information, the space in which they're making decisions. Because you're making a decision about a young person's right to consent, but you don't even allow them to participate in the conversation.